In Tracy Letts' Man from Nebraska, Reed Burney plays a quiet middle-aged man who loses his faith in God and sets off on a desperate journey to find himself with surprising results. The play was a finalist for the Pulitzer Prize in 24, but it has just now been receiving its New York premiere at the Second Stage's Tony Kaiser Theater on West 43rd Street. I'm very pleased that it brings playwright Tracy Letts and star Reed Burney, both Tony Award winners, back to our show. Welcome back.
Thanks. Great to be here.
Tracy, didn't you write this play before August Osage County, which won the Pulitzer for Drama, the Tony Award for Best Play?
I did. I wrote this play in 2002 and first performed at Steppenwolf in 2003.
And it won. It was a finalist for the Pulitzer over a dozen years ago. Why is it only getting a New York production now?
It's a good question. I think maybe some of the other plays that have found their way to New York are more demonstrative. Man from Nebraska is a somewhat quieter, more contemplative piece. And sometimes I think that your play has to make some loud noises in order to make that that New York move.
Reed, you won a Tony last year for The Humans. Had you and Tracy worked together before?
We had. We first met in 2003 when we both were acting in Tony Kushner's Homebody Cobble at Steppenwolf Theater. And the very next play after Homebody Cobble was Man from Nebraska. So Tracy was very excited and working hard on that, and we all got to listen to him talk about the next play.
But you didn't appear in
it.
I did not appear in it.
I went off and did Homebody Cobble other places while he stayed behind and did Man from Nebraska.
No, I didn't see the production at Steppenwolf, but I'm assuming that one of the reasons that it's a big success here in New York is you have Reed playing the lead part. I mean, casting is important, isn't it?
Reed's a fantastic actor, and I'm delighted he's in my play, playing Man from Nebraska.
What appealed to you about the role of Ken Carpenter, the title character here? What kind of man is he?
Well, he's a quintessentially Midwestern man, I think one of the things that's so appealing about living in the Midwest is the peace that comes there and the quiet. And I think that Ken Carpenter suddenly realizes that he's maybe missed out on a lot of things in his life by just taking the road that was assigned him.
Tracy, people are aware of the fact that you write plays and you also are an actor. We see you all the time on television, for example. Won a Tony for Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, best actor there. How does your experience as an actor affect your writing process when you're writing a play? Are you think about what it would be like to perform the lines?
No, I don't. It's weird. I compartmentalize somehow. I'm using different parts of my brain. I do hope that one helps the other in that. As a writer, when I see some actor wandering off into the woods, and I think, why the hell are they doing that? The next time I'm acting, I try not to wander off into the woods myself.
On the other hand, I'm sure that actors sometimes do things that you didn't even imagine while you were writing the play, and you're so excited that they saw that in your character.
It's always better. You know, that's why I love collaboration so much, because whatever picture I have in my mind, the show never winds up looking like that picture. It's actually always better than the picture in my head.
Have you ever acted in one of your own plays?
No, and I have no interest in doing it.
So you didn't want to play this part?
Never.
He'd be awful good in it.
Never.
You're from Oklahoma.
I am.
Does that give you insight into Nebraska?
I think a little bit. You know, Oklahoma's actually a little more interesting than Nebraska, I think. Please address cards and letters, right, Nebraskans, to Leonard Lopate.
Shout out to Nebraska.
Flood of mail from Omaha.
but they're very close, obviously, geographically, and so they do share a certain Maude Jode in Grapes of Wrath says, our people, we take a pride in holding in. And I think there's something about that applies to Nebraska as well.
We first see Ken and his wife Nancy in a series of very short, almost wordless scenes in a car, in church, in a restaurant, visiting his mother in a nursing home. Was it your goal to portray how their daily lives portray them in the shortest, most economical, almost cinematic way?
Well, I really wanted to sit in their lives for a while. I really wanted the audience to absorb their rhythms and understand just exactly when there is a schism, understand just what exactly it is they're breaking from.
Monotony to some degree.
To some degree, and yet there's a lot of comfort in monotony, you know? I mean, their monotony is not necessarily a painful monotony. The truth is that there's a lot of comfort in routine.
How important is religion to their family life? They also have a daughter, Ashley, who works with Ken in his insurance company.
Well, religion is huge in this story. They're Baptist, and they're born again, and they're not Bible-thumping fundamentalists. They're not what we think of as that, but they're very quiet religious people, and that has dictated a huge part of what their life is, their daily routine.
I'm speaking with Reed Birney, who is starring in Man from Nebraska, written by Tracy Letts. This is WMIC, WMIC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. And then one night, Ken confesses to his wife, Nancy, that he's lost faith in God, and we see he's really suffering. Is this just a midlife crisis, or is it something more profound?
I think midlife crises can be pretty profound. I think both are true. I think it's a midlife crisis that shakes him to his very core, as anybody who's had one does.
And is this a problem for an actor? Because it's important for you to make audiences care about him, even religious audience members.
I think anybody of a certain age watching the play will recognize the questions that Ken is asking.
Is that what got you thinking about this play, Tracy? The nature of faith and what the loss of it might mean to a religious person?
I don't know exactly what I was doing there, but for some reason I was in a cafeteria in Lincoln, Nebraska, and there was a couple sitting at a table not speaking to one another. Clearly a married couple, older couple, very comfortably not speaking for the entirety of their meal. And it got me wondering if, is there a point in every person's life where they ask the big questions? What am I doing here? What is my purpose? Is there a God? And so the jumping off point for me was finding a person who seemed the least likely person to ask that question and then put that question in their head.
Because it could be a lot of other things. You could question your political beliefs, the profession you've chosen, or a person you have once admired, or whether you love your spouse.
I think those all become part of the question, but the fundamental and biggest point is Ken says in the play he's had God and the Baptist faith in his life since he could remember. So when the world starts to fall apart, he has to think it has something to do with God.
And when Ken's minister suggests that he take a trip by himself, he heads off to London. Why London? Because he speaks English?
He was stationed there in the Air Force as a young man, and he says it seemed distant but not too distant. I think English-speaking was a huge part of it. I don't think Ken speaks many languages.
You know, in a sense, he takes a very big journey for a guy like himself, and in another sense, it's a very small step, actually.
But he does meet people who are unlike the people he would have known at home, a series of oddball characters, a sexually adventurous woman, a friendly bartender, and her roommate, a sculptor. For Ken, is just talking to new people a brave act?
Yes, of course. I mean, he has lived his whole life in the same town where he knew everyone and knew how everything worked. Suddenly he's holding British pounds in his hands, and you know, that's just the beginning of the new world that he's entering.
Isn't that a brave act for anybody, though, to speak to people outside of your sphere, to reach out to people beyond your experience and your routine?
I mean, people do it much more easily than others, the gregarious ones, but then we...
And the radio hosts who get to sit here as the world comes through the
door. If I
go to
a party, I don't necessarily wind up speaking to everybody.
Right.
I can often just stand in a corner.
Watch. Yeah, that's what Ken does.
Well, you were mentioning earlier, Tracy, that this was kind of unlike some of your other plays. Anyone who's seen August Osage County or Killer Joe or Bug, the tone of this one seems restrained. Did you deliberately set out to write something more contemplative?
No, I didn't, actually, because that presupposes that I have a plan, and there is no plan. I have a story, and then I think of the best container for that story. It just so happened that this story was about very restrained people dealing with a crisis of faith and doing it in the manner that befits their character.
And then, you know, Nancy's back home in Nebraska not knowing what to think. Their daughter Ashley is kind of up in the air. Do you see Ken as a sympathetic character, even though his behavior has caused his wife and daughter to suffer?
I like Ken. I mean, Ken does some things that maybe not everybody will approve of, but the truth is he's a man in crisis, and he's doing the best he can. I like him. You know, one of the things I discovered or rediscovered about the play when we went back to work on it for this production was everybody Ken encounters is trying to help him. For a guy who's got a problem, to continually encounter people who are attempting to help him, that's actually not the way drama's supposed to go, but it's the way this play works. It's kind of strange.
I mentioned casting before. How much input did you have in choosing the cast and director? Because here you have David Cromer, who seems like the perfect fit for a play like this.
Oh, he is. I go back with David to our Chicago roots 30 years ago.
First time I became aware of him was Our Town, which was one of the absolutely great productions.
Outstanding.
10 years ago or
yeah,
so.
Yeah, outstanding. And David has directed me as an actor maybe four times, so I've known David for 30 years. But this is the first time he's directed a piece of mine, and he was a natural fit and the first person I thought of to do this here in New York.
Reed, you've been in a lot of plays in the past few years. The Humans, Casa Valentina, Blasted, and then TV series, the Blacklist, House of Cards.
I've seen all of them. I'm your biggest fan, apparently.
Is there more crossover between TV and theater now than when you first started out, especially since New York, Brooklyn in particular, have become so important
for
TV production?
Amazing television happening in New York City. At one point, I don't know if it's still true, there was more in New York than in Los Angeles. So we theater actors are really reaping the benefits of that.
And Tracy, you're all over the place too, because you're acting and are you still writing plays?
I have a new play about to start rehearsals at Steppenwolf in Chicago in just a couple of weeks.
Did you just start writing plays because you weren't getting the roles you wanted, or is it that you just had this other itch that you had to scratch?
No, I had always written. I had written even as a little kid. I wrote stories and stuff. It's always been an interest of mine. And then when I got involved in theater, especially Chicago theater, and in our storefront scene in Chicago, if you write a small play, you can get it produced. And I had some downtime as an actor and wrote a play called Killer Joe when I was, 26, 28, something like that.
Pretty much all your plays have been made into films, or in the case of Superior Donuts, a TV series. What about this one? Do you think that this could be a movie? Because there is something cinematic about it, especially all those scene changes.
You know, it's funny you say that, because when people would look at Killer Joe and Bug, they would always say, wow, this should be a movie. And I would always say, really? It seems to me Man from Nebraska should be a movie, because that's the one with, I mean, there are 29 scenes in Man from Nebraska. But, you know, that's not my job.
Mm-hmm. It is very cinematic, and several people have commented to me on the sort of the movie-like quality of our production.
It's running until March 12th?
March 12th.
Any chance of an extension?
We can extend, if the traffic will allow, to the 26th of March. Mm-hmm. Two more
and
weeks.
Then after that, you got other things to do?
And then after that, the theater has other plans, and we'll all go about our business, I guess.
But meanwhile, people can see Man from Nebraska at the Terry Kaiser Theater at 305 West 43rd Street until March 12th at least.
For sure, yeah.
And do you like this theater? Because it's intimate.
This is my fourth time working at Second Stage in my career. It's an amazing theater.
Does it remind you of Steppenwolf in any way?
Not really, but I've had a great time.
Thank you both so much for being our show. The Tony Kaiser. Why did I say Terry Kaiser? Terry Kaiser
is an actor.
Yeah, he's an actor. I thought, why would they name a theater after Terry Kaiser? It was fun, but Tony Kaiser Theater, West 43rd Street. Thank you both so much, Tracy Letts and Reed Burney, for being on our show.
Thanks, Leonard.